Welcome to Senior Power of Maine. Hi, I'm your host, David Neely, and as the past publisher of Maine Seniors Magazine, I know that senior power is Maine's greatest natural resource. Yes, I said senior power. Maine senior citizens are the reason Maine has the highest volunteer rate in the nation. In fact, the involvement of our seniors in community and civic organizations provide the very fabric of our cities and towns, making them great places to live. And Maine is also considered a generous state, despite our low income, with most of our philanthropy coming from, you guessed it, Maine's seniors. This radio program, Senior Power of Maine, will be filled with a combination of entertainment and information for mature audiences only. So if you are a senior partner or work with those who are, you'll want to grab a cup of coffee and enjoy our Senior Power Half Hour this and every Saturday morning from 8 to 8:30. My co-host this morning is Lynn McGregor. Good morning, Lynn.
And good morning to you, David, and to all our senior partners. I have to tell you, I'm very pleased to be able to provide some light on both facts and myths about aging. Did you know that 1,000 people a month in Maine turn 65 and Maine imports seniors?
Yes, I did. And I'll be one of those in a few short years at age 60, Lynn. I look forward to my golden years.
Well, I'm headed towards 60 in a few short months, and I can't wait. How about this one, David? Fact or myth? Most older people have significant loss of mental acuity.
Myth.
Yes, that is correct. The fact is, only 7% of people over 65 suffer from any clinical form of mental loss.
Lynn, this one sort of bothers me because people are too quick to judge a slow recall or memory lapse as a senior moment or even worse, when most of the time it's no more than cognitive overload. Speaking of which, I almost forgot to mention a special shout-out to our show sponsor, the Senior Planning Center, which is Maine's leading senior resource for Medicare health plans. The Senior Planning Center represents all the major Medicare health plans and offers you a free Medicare review. Help when it matters most at the Senior Planning Center. In a few minutes, we'll have Brad Dyer of the Senior Planning Center on to speak with us about special enrollment periods.
Okay, David, another fact or myth. Most older people want to live a life of leisure.
Fact.
Actually, this is a myth too. The fact is, most older adults are looking to be involved in an active community life. They were busy most of their adult life, and they choose to stay busy.
Lynn, you have stumped the chump on that one. I should have known better.
So now we're going to have on the radio, wow, you talk about senior power, we're going to have on the radio what may be the world's most senior licensed lobsterman. In fact, Elizabeth Jenny Oliver is known as the lobster lady in Maine. She's 102 years old and she is still lobstering. Welcome to the show, Jeannie.
Hi.
How are you, Jenny?
Good.
Good.
I'm 101, not 102.
Oh, David.
Oh, my goodness. So is it possible you aren't the oldest licensed lobster person in the state of Maine?
I guess so.
Yeah, so I imagine you are. Why don't you tell us a little bit about when you started lobstering?
Well, I used to go with my brother. I was probably 7 or 8 years old then.
And where did you do it from, Jenny?
The neck of Andrew Island.
Is that here in Maine?
That is, no. The name of it is Andrew's Island Neck. Is the name of the island.
Okay. Is it out in Penobscot Bay?
Yes, it's on, it's off from Spruce End.
Okay, now I know where you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, and you started at 7?
Oh, probably 7.
And what were you doing at 7 on a lobster boat?
Well, I used to go with my brother, and 'cause so I had to fill the bags.
Oh, all the good jobs, right?
I think that's why I went.
To put that stinky old bait in a bag?
Yeah.
Yeah? So you'd fill the bait bags. And when did they let you do stuff like hauling the traps?
Well, I didn't have any traps at that age. I had traps when I went with my husband.
Oh, okay.
I had 200.
You had 200 traps?
Yes.
Wow. And is that what he did for a living, was a lobsterman?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Wow. And I understand that you had, what was it, 4 kids or 5?
No, I have 3 boys.
Okay.
And 1 daughter.
1 daughter. And do they all lobster with you?
Yes, they all lobster. That's it all, you know, lobster.
Oh, my goodness. So the whole family lobsters.
Yeah, well, see, my father was a lobster dealer.
Oh.
And he had fishwares and sold them to the sardine factories.
Yeah?
And so that's, you know, that's why I lived on the island until I had to go to school. And then my father had a house in Rockland. Then I had to live with my aunt.
Oh, with
and
your...
I can just remember my grandmother. She died when I was 5. But
right.
I can just remember.
Now, did you
and
live
my
with
my grandfather
your...
died it when I was 10, so...
And your aunt, was that because you had to go to school, you lived with your aunt?
Yes. Okay. Yes, that's why I had to live with my aunt. This was my mother's sister.
Yes. Yeah, there was a lot of that going on back then.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I know my mother had to live with some aunts growing up during certain times in her life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you got married and you started lobstering with your husband?
I got married, but no.
No.
I didn't work until my youngest son was 9.
Oh, okay.
I stayed home, took care of the kids. And then after that, I went to work, and I worked at Bonavada, a printing place in Rockland, for 18 and a half years.
And then it was after that you got into lobstering with your husband?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, one day he came home, and I had a whole yard full of clothes hung out. He said, I thought you went to work. And I said, well, I did, but I quit. I said, I'm going with you.
So you quit doing the laundry and went on the lobster boat?
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. And tell me what goes on board a lobster boat. I know you have to fill the bait bags.
Yes, and measure the lobsters.
Okay.
And I band the lobsters.
Yes.
And we have a water tank that we, you know, have to keep them in.
Oh, I never even thought about that.
Oh, yeah. Otherwise, they die on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never been on board a lobster boat, so I haven't seen everything that goes on board one.
Well, see, I can't do... I really grew right up at this stuff.
You did what now?
I really grew right up at, you know, lobstering and all
of
that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's all second nature to you.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Now, do you have to... Can you fill the tank? Is it below the water, below the deck, or do you have to fill it by buckets, or how does...
Oh, no, we have a pump that...
Oh, okay.
...and hose on it that, you know, pumps the water right in it, because you have to keep that water circulating all the time.
Sure. Well, you can tell I'm a landlubber, right? Yeah. So, and you got to fill the tanks. Now, do you have an automatic, what is it, a winch that hauls in the lobster traps, or do you still pull them in?
Yeah,
so you don't even have to haul those up by hand anymore.
No.
No.
Everything, a lot of things has changed over the years.
Yeah, but it makes your life easier.
Oh, yes. I don't think any work is hard as it used to be years ago.
I would agree with that. We have a lot of tools and equipment now that does make life easier.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, good, Jenny. I want to thank you for doing what you do. You're truly amazing. You're an inspiration to me. I hope to all our listeners to be 101 and out there still lobstering. I can tell you honestly that there are not many people, many women who could do that.
No, there didn't used to be any women go with their husbands or their boyfriends, but now there's a lot of them, go with them.
Sure, sure.
I see them.
It's got to be hard work.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's not hard work to me.
It's a labor of love, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, when it's a labor of love, it's not working.
No.
Yes. Well, Jenny, you've been absolutely wonderful, and we thank you for coming on and doing the radio show today.
Well, thank you.
Well, you take care, and I look forward to seeing you lobstering at 102, my dear.
All right.
Okay.
Bye.
Take care.
Yeah, bye.
Now we have Brad Dyer joining us with the Senior Planning Center. And could you just hit a few of the trigger points that may set off the need for a Medicare beneficiary to, at almost any time of year, look at a special enrollment period?
That is such a great question. I'll tell you, you do this long enough, you learn some great tips and tricks. And when I say tricks, I don't mean anything nefarious. But what I'm saying is, it used to be the belief that you just had to wait till October 15th through December 7th. That's the annual enrollment period. And then there were some special enrollment periods, depending if you moved or if you left employer coverage. And if you are leaving employer coverage, don't panic. You have a special election period lasts, 63 days. But what we discovered is that we can enroll anybody, just about anybody, year-round. So if you're on an expensive Medicare supplement or on a Medicare health plan that isn't serving you, a drug plan that isn't serving you, it's very likely that when you engage us that we could get that plan changed as early as the beginning, the first day of the next month, even if it's on the last day of the month if you move fast enough. So I would say if you're out there going, we haven't shopped this forever, or wow, this is expensive and you're trying to figure out how you're going to make it, you really ought to engage one of our teammates. I've got a great team, our client support team, that you can call at 227-223-6565, and they're fantastic. Or call or come visit one of our offices. We do take walk-ins if you want to come see us. You might be amazed. We can save people up to $10,000 a year as a couple. And I'm not throwing that number out just because a few people we've done that with. We do that so often, it's old hat here. So they really should engage us if they feel like a change is needed.
Thanks again, Brad. Great to have you on.
Thanks, David. See ya.
Our next guest on Senior Power is Maine's quintessential humorist. He is somebody that I feel has highlighted good Maine humor all over the country, in part due to a program he had called Postcards from Maine for over 10 years with Charles Kuralt on Sunday mornings. One of our resident Mainers by the name of Stephen King, and I quote, said, "He's a funny guy. You'll get no argument from me on that score, but no more comedian than Mark Twain or Artemis Ward. Like them, Timmy isn't acting. He's just talking in a kind of heightened and gifted way, as folks do when they're passing on valuable tales about the human condition." And with no more further ado, we welcome Tim Sample, Maine's humorist, to the show.
Thank you so much. I am exceptionally happy to join you today.
Well, now, I wanted to go way back, if we could, to your youth. I believe you were born in Aroostook County. And then
that is correct.
Yeah, Fort Fairfield, was it? So, I mean, jeepers, you had a chance even the day you were born to think to think like Mainer.
My folks were living in Limestone in January of 1951. And back then, according to my late mother, Leah, if you wanted to get born indoors and you didn't want to get born in your living room and you lived in Limestone, you better get over to Fort Fairfield, where the only hospital was in the area.
Well, then you, at some point, I can't remember how this all worked out, but traversed to Hancock County and ended up on the coast of Maine.
Well, Lincoln County, you were close. My family roots are in Hancock County, but about 1955, my folks had gotten divorced, and my mother moved back down to the coast, moved to Boothe Bay Harbor, and remarried, and my brother and my sister and I went along for the ride, and we were adopted by Frank Sample. So my name originally, when I was on my original birth certificate, was Timothy John Parker, and I became Timothy John Sample on or about 1956. There's quite a lot of convoluted twists in this story, but I ended up going to kindergarten and graduating from high school with the same 40-some-odd kids in Boothe Bay Harbor. So that's my hometown.
Well, you know, you did have an unfortunate accident when you were around 10 years old, falling off a swing on a playground, and which led to some issues, which in a way, you know, may have led to your good sense of humor overall. But can you share a little bit about how that affected your life growing up?
Yeah, I would be happy to do that. And I am particularly happy to talk about that because one of the issues that is currently being discussed is the effects on adults who have or had some kind of learning disability or autism spectrum disorder or other issues that were not diagnosed back in the day in the 50s and 60s when that information and understanding and medical knowledge about these things was much less full and complete than the information we have today. So the long story short is I had a very serious closed head injury. I was out on one of the swings that we all had in the schoolyards in Maine in the 1950s and 60s, these big tall swings with chains on them, and I was swinging on the swing after school, and apparently, I don't remember this because I actually have a very rare, but I have total amnesia for a chunk of this time after the accident, but I apparently the chain broke or something broke, and I fell, I don't know, 20 or 30 feet and landed on my head, and I was around 10 years old, and apparently the kids, you know, gathered around, and I told them I was okay. I got up, and I started walking home. And my next-door neighbor encountered me wandering in the middle of the road a few blocks from where I lived and gave me a ride home. Well, one thing led to another. It turned out I had received this massive head injury, and they induced a coma. So this would have been about 1961 at St. Andrew's Hospital. I was having such violent convulsions from the blood on my brain that they induced a coma, and I was in a coma for several weeks. And I came out of it, and I had probably, it all happened decades ago, but as a result of that, I had a seizure disorder. for which I took anti-seizure medication for years. But I also, it now appears, I was diagnosed in my 50s with something called nonverbal learning disorder, which is often the most common cause is a childhood head injury. And what it, kids with NLD, one of the things that I, that some of the symptoms or the aspects of having NLD is I process extremely well and extremely quickly verbally, but not so much with the written word. And there's a odd, what the neurologist told me was that a section of my brain was damaged, and you can look at it on a CAT scan. There's about the size of a 50-cent piece, there's a black spot there. And what happened, because I was a young boy, I was 10, the brain rewired itself, but it rewired itself in ways that are different from the way it was wired up originally. So, long story short, still pretty long, but what happens is people with NLD can very frequently make extremely fast associations between this and that. There's a wonderful book by Temple Grandin. I think the book may, or the chapter may be called Thinking in Pictures, and many autistic people on the autism spectrum literally think in pictures. I think in pictures. And so I'm constantly making visual and verbal analogies. This is to this, as that is to that. Well, that's an essential tool for humor. And as a monologist, as a stand-up, doing stand-up on stage, what makes it funny is people will constantly say to me, oh my gosh, I never thought of that until you said it. But I'll say, did you ever notice how this is like that, and this is like that, and like that? So in that respect, although it created many problems because I scored astronomically high on aptitude tests and did poorly in classwork. And of course, in 1965 or whatever, that was translated as you're lazy. And this is something you'll hear time and again from people with undiagnosed learning disabilities. But as you point out, it's quite likely that that disability or that different ability that came about as a result of that head injury actually played a positive role in my ability to do, to stand up on stage and talk for 2 hours and make sense to people and do things like that.
Well, Tim, I mean, I'm so glad you shared that story. My mother actually used to be with a group, multiple handicap, known as Amicus in Bangor. And she was involved with the group some 20 years at her retirement. They had asked her, she retired, she's chair of the board of volunteer. But they asked her, why did she get involved with that group? Did one of her children, of course, remember that would include me, have disabilities? And she said, actually, we all do. Some are more noticeable than others. And in many cases, those with disabilities, and you just highlighted this, if they find their niche or that thing that they can really do best, it doesn't have to be a significant disability, but that sort of one size fits all in the way we work. And for instance, in our even in our public school systems, you know, isn't the end all. But can I skip from that to now you going and being one of the keynote speakers with George Mitchell at at Hebron, at the 200th anniversary of Hebron?
Well, in fact, there were only two keynote speakers. It was me and there was George Mitchell. And George Mitchell is a wonderful friend of mine. I've known George Mitchell for decades. I am old enough to be able to make the statement that I used to warm up the crowd for Ed Muskie when he was in the Senate. And when he got kicked upstairs in the Carter administration, was it Carter?
Yes.
That had him as,
Yes.
And so Mitchell was tapped to fill out Muskie's Senate term, but when George ran on his own for the first time, he asked me if I'd warm up the crowd, you know, and introduce him and so forth, which I was happy to do. He's a wonderful human being. But when when I was asked, I went to Hebron Academy, and I had this undiagnosed learning disability, and I failed utterly. I flunked all my courses, and in the genteel language of the prep schools of the day, I was not asked to return. That was a great phrase. But anyway, over the years, much to the credit of Hebron Academy, I must say, they understood in a deeper way some of the issues. They were as baffled as I was. I mean, they really were. They said they didn't understand how someone with as high a verbal aptitude as I had, an obvious aptitude that was able to be tested and quantified, but I would do so poorly on the classroom stuff. And at any rate, so they asked me to be the keynote speaker. I didn't know that George was also had, there were two nights, it was a Friday and Saturday, I think. George was on Friday, I was on Saturday, or something like that. But the most powerful thing, and it's one of the most wonderful things that ever happened to me in my long career, is that at the end of the evening, after I concluded my remarks and I got a standing ovation, and then John King, who was the head of school at the time, came up and he said, "Now we have something for you." And they awarded me the only honorary degree that has ever been awarded in the 200-year history of, at that time, 200-year history of Hebron Academy. And I was just moved. And on the way out of the parking lot, one of my masters from all those years before came up to me and said, "I just wanted to," it was Jay Woolsey, and Jay Woolsey is my ancient medieval history teacher, a wonderful guy, and he looked like an aged version of himself. He looked just the same, only 40 years later. And he said, "Tim, I just want you to know that we understand that we weren't there for you in a way that we should have been. We have subsequently learned much about the kind of issues we have, and I want you to know, for me personally, that doesn't happen the way it used to, and we now understand." It was such a meaningful thing, and literally, I went home and sat on the couch with my wife and cried. And I have that honorary diploma in a prominent place in my office. It was a really big deal for me.
Well, Tim, we can't thank you enough for today. I mean, thank you so much for being on the show.
Happy to be a part of it, and just let people know that they can go to timsample.com. I have something on my website called the Maine Humor Store. You can purchase my books and albums and things from years back, and it's fascinating. I just sent off a couple of box sets to Chicago. Last Christmas, I sent products off to 38 different states around the country. So, you know, if people want to laugh, that's a good way to get a hold of the stuff.
Just timsample.com?
Yeah.
Very good. Well, thanks again. Maine Humorist Tim Sample.
Thank you.
So, David, if I want to listen to last week's episode, where do I go to do that?
All you have to do is go to seniorpower.me. That is seniorpower.me, short for Maine, seniorpower.me, and listen to your favorite episode of Senior Power. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Senior Power.
My insurance kept going up and up and up and up.
I was getting a lot of mail about Medicare.
I could never have navigated through the loopholes.
Mainers across the state are finding help at Senior Planning Center, which represents all major Medicare health plans.
Senior Planning Center was a lifesaver.
Senior Planning Center did it all.
Gave me all my options and signed me up with what I needed within an hour.
Call 223-6565. 223-6565. Help when it matters most. Senior Planning Center.com.